I'm sure by now most of you have seen the pictures of the tornadoes that touched down in Kentucky and Illinois over the weekend. The images are just heartbreaking. Jeannie and I were talking about it yesterday. Here's a lot of people who are preparing for the holidays, buying gifts, looking forward to time spent with families, and now life's very different for them. And so, continuing what we started last week, we were talking last week about allowing the peace of God to rule or umpire in our hearts. And so I wanted to elaborate a little bit more on that this evening by talking about what do we do when tragedy strikes, when something completely out of our vision, we're not even expecting it, not even thinking about it, a sudden loss of health, the death of a loved one, a major financial setback, or pestilence, drought, famine. These are things that can, without any warning, crash, just like waves, into our lives, and they leave us a little bit stunned. So what happens next, after that initial sense of complete bewilderment, is based on our spiritual maturity, based on how much we've thought about it, based on the steps that we've taken to know what we want to do next. So some, like Job, can take tragedy in stride. I want to lay this all up so everybody can see it. In one day, one messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen and the donkeys were taken and all the servants are dead." While he was still speaking, another came. The fire of God fell down from heaven, burned up sheep and the servants. I alone have escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, the Chaldeans raided the camels and took them and killed the servants. I alone have escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, your sons and daughters were in a brother's house. A great wind came and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they are dead. And I alone have escaped to tell you. That's tragedy. It looks like, judging from what happened to the sons and daughters, that might have been a tornado, a great wind. Judging from the fact that the sheep were burned up, that might have been a big thunderstorm. I don't know what the fire of God coming down from heaven could be except that. Then we have people who have come in, like war, and just stolen and killed. And so Job lost everything in a single day. Now, he just had a few seconds to process all of this. I mean, it was bang and bang and bang and bang. And his initial response revealed that he had made preparations for this. He had already thought about, what will I do should this occur? Because you can't just respond like this without careful thought and without careful preparation. Job arose, tore his robe, and shaved his head, and fell to the ground and worshipped. And he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Would that be our response? Would that be the first response that we would have if something like that happened? Or would we go through a real spiritual upheaval where we had to bring ourselves back to this kind of a sense? Verse 22, "In all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong." So even though in a single day his whole world imploded, exploded, crashed down around him, all of his possessions and all of his children are gone. Everything that he's worked for is gone. And his response, "Well, I came naked from my mother's womb, and I'm going to go back naked." So all of these things, in the overall scheme of things, are not that important. Now, you say, well, how could you think like that? Well, because that's how God wants us to think. In the book of Ecclesiastes, God makes it very clear, we live in a world of time and chance. We live in a world where things are crooked, where things are lacking. We live in a world where what should happen to the wicked happens to the righteous, and what should happen to the righteous happens to the wicked. We live in a world where that can happen. And God said, I want you to understand this. This is a part of the curse. Now, our relationship is not contingent on any of these things because our relationship is a spiritual relationship. I'm going to give you eternal life. And I'm going to bless you. But I can't promise you that you're going to go through life without having to deal with things like Job. And so when Job says, I came naked and I'm going back naked, that's a fact. And it's a fact that we all need to have in the back of our mind. Because one of these days, it's going to happen to all of us. Nobody gets to go through life without having to deal with tragedy. Now, a few weeks or a few months later, we don't know how long it was, Job was struck with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. If you've ever had a boil, you know the excruciating pain that you have when somebody even touches it. It is a pain that you can't even hardly describe. It's an interesting pain. And yet Job has them from all the bottoms of his feet to the top of his head. And not only does he have these boils, but they're also filled with pus and they're breaking open. And he talks about a stench that his wife doesn't even like to be around him anymore because of the stench that is coming. And so he's out in the midst of the ashes. So he takes for himself this potsherd or something to scrape off the pus. You can't even imagine. His inner mind is still torn up. He's lost his family. He's lost his friends. He's lost his possessions. He's lost his children. Everything is gone. In chapter, I think it's 29 and 30, Job starts listing all the things that have happened to him as a result. And it just causes your heart to ache for him. Now, Job's wife wasn't prepared. And she responded, curse God and die. You think she might have been a little despondent? You think that she might have been a little exasperated? Why is God doing this to us? We should curse him and then die. But Job tries to help her. You speak as one of the foolish women speak. I don't think he was rebuking her. I think he was trying to bring her back to earth. Think about what you're saying. We came naked. We're going back naked. Anything that happens in between is immaterial once we leave this world. And so you're speaking like one of the foolish women. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity? Clearly, Job had an umpire in his heart. Clearly, Job had something in his heart that his wife didn't have. Her emotions overwhelmed her and pushed her to do something. I'm sure she regretted later. Because the initial response, you know, God said in the final book of, or excuse me, chapter 12 of Hebrews. No, I think it's 10. He says that we need to have endurance. That we do not know what is going to happen, but his expectation, as he says in one of the Proverbs, if you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. Now that's God's assessment. That's not my assessment. That's God's assessment. If you can't, if having me as your God and trusting me and trusting my word, if you can't handle adversity, it's a problem in your faith. But remember, faith comes by hearing. And faith is an interesting thing because we might have enough faith in one realm that we could walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and yet in another realm, we may have a small faith that we can't handle it. And sometimes, we don't even know it until it comes upon us, and we find ourselves doing things and saying things and thinking to ourselves, how in the world? I would have never dreamed that I would have responded like this. I would have never thought that this is how it would go. And so these things in the scriptures are given to us to try to help prepare us for when these things occur. David faced a very similar disaster. The Amalekites attacked Ziklag, which is where he was living with his family and those people that were running away from Saul. They burned it with fire. And they took captive the women and those who were there, did not kill anyone, but carried them away. So they come back and all their wives, their children, their possessions, everything's gone, just like Job. A little worse than Job. Not only is their children, but their wives. So David and his men came to the city. Then David and the people lifted up their voices and wept until they had no more power to weep. Well, that's a pretty clear indication that their emotions were stirred. But then they went in two different directions. First, the people wanted to stone David, and David was comforted in his God. So let's look at that. David was greatly distressed for the people, spoke of stoning him. Why is it his fault? Why would you turn on David when you were out trying to do what the Lord wanted done, and this happened by chance? But that was their response. They responded with anger. They responded with, just like the children of Israel in the wilderness, they responded with murmuring and grumbling and complaining. And sadly, that's the first thought a lot of people have. This is not fair. Now, as soon as you say that, let's see, whose fault is it? It's not my fault. This is not fair. Well, it's David's fault. It's Moses' fault. It's God's fault. Don't go down that path because it ends in bitterness. Because it's no one's fault. It is the problem of living in a world of sin, of curse, and of time and chance. Because the soul of all the people were grieved, every man for his sons and his daughters. Well, that's natural. But look at what David did. David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. There's a real important secret here. There's a really important situation here that we need to consider very carefully because it's a secret. It's a secret that Job knew, David knew, Paul knew, and we need to know. I've learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, you say, well, Paul didn't really have it too tough. Well, sit down and read 1 Corinthians chapter 3 when he talks about how he is the filth and the off-scouring and how they are mistreated. Or when he talks in 2 Corinthians about in perils of rivers and robbers and being a night in the day in the deep and being stoned and being beaten and being imprisoned. I know how to get along in every and any circumstance. Do we? Are we prepared? I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. I'm looking at how violent the world's getting, and I'm thinking to myself, sooner or later, this is going to touch me. Either personally, my family, a brother or sister in Christ, it's going to touch us because the world is becoming more and more wicked. Are we ready to get that phone call? Your son was murdered. This brother was raped, or excuse me, sister was raped. I know how to get along in any and every circumstance. I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, of having an abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Now remember, he's inspired by the Holy Spirit. These are not confident words. These are not proud words. These are not words that are not true. Paul had learned the secret. Now, the main ingredient of the secret he had already spoken. In Philippians 4, 11 through 14, he talks about the secret. In Philippians 4, verses 6 and 7, just a few verses earlier, he explains how the secret works. Now, I don't want to get into this too much right now. We'll come back to this in a minute. But the answer is, don't be anxious. Be anxious for nothing. But in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your request be made known to God. This is what Job did. This is what David did. This is what Paul did. It is the first response to a tragedy. Prayer, supplication. There's a request behind every tragedy. There's a request. Father, please comfort me. Father, please be with my children. Or if my children are dead, Father, please comfort me. I've lost my children. There's a request. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding. Now, that's where the secret lies. This is not just cause and effect. There's something beyond cause and effect, because if it was just cause and effect, we could easily explain it. I could explain to you that if you trust in the Lord with all your heart and something bad happens, you can just lean on the Lord. Well, that's understandable. This passes understanding. And it guards the thoughts and the minds. Now, let's go back and let's see what David did in that very last verse. David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. So the foundation is based on what we have so far. If we don't have a relationship with God, we don't have a foundation. We don't know the secret. If we have a relationship with God, and we know that all things work together for good to those that love God, we start having a confidence that no matter what I go through, even through the valley of the shadow of death, God knows. Now, God will not allow us to be tempted above what we're able to bear. So if something happens, I'm not going to blame it on God. Job's issues had nothing to do with God. It was the greed, it was time and chance, and it was also Satan wanting to destroy Job, and it was also God wanting to prove and show that Job could do this, and he did. Now, after the fact, God blessed Job abundantly. But what if he hadn't? What if he had just died and gone to the place in Hades where there is comfort, where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob would ultimately be as well? Unless, I like this verse, unless the Lord had been my help, my soul would have soon settled in silence. If I say my foot slips, your mercy will hold me up. In the multitude of my anxieties within me, your comforts delight my soul. Think about what he's saying here. The multitude of my anxieties. This man, like Paul maybe, fightings outside, fears within, conflict, loss, probable difficulties. All there. Paul said, I had the death sentence passed in me. I knew I was going to die because I was going to go out into Ephesus, into that place where the crowds were rioting, great as Diana of the Ephesians. Settled in silence, depression, gloom, woe. I don't have anything more to say. We're just going to sink into the depths. No joy, no happiness, no answers. I would have settled in silence. If what? Unless the Lord had been my help. I had confidence in God. Now, this wasn't written by David. I wish it had, because we could make some interesting applications, but it really doesn't matter. Your comforts. Now, look at what he's saying here. My soul would have settled in silence. Things are going on here that would overwhelm most people. But in the multitude of my anxieties, your comforts delight my soul. Now, there's a secret there, isn't there? Don't you think that would be a secret? That in the multitude of your anxieties, your comforts would actually bring delight. There was some delight in Job while this is going on. There was some delight in Paul while this was going on. Why? Because they knew that God was with them, and that God would ultimately, all things work together for good. And that can delight our soul. It's the light at the end of the tunnel. It's the realization that my world is imploding right now. I don't have anywhere to go. I don't have any way to fix this. I don't know what to do. My soul is going to settle in silence and I'm just going to give up. No, I'm going to see that God has allowed these things to happen. God has confidence in me like he did in Job. And God will, how did Jesus put it? Receive 100-fold in this time and in the life to come, eternal life. You will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you. That's where the comfort is. We focus on God. This is something we've talked about in the past. Many people, because of the prosperity of our country, we have a crutch. We love the Lord and we trust the Lord and we delight in the Lord, but we also lean on our material possessions for our happiness. We comfort ourselves in our hobbies and our joys and other activities. When they're gone, and all we have left is the Lord, at that moment, we're either going to settle into silence or we're going to trust in the Lord with all our heart. You will keep him in perfect peace if the mind is stayed on you. So that's our first question. Can we truly and honestly say that our minds are totally fixed on God? That we love God, we trust God, we're grateful for the spiritual blessings, we are happy with the material blessings, but they're not essential to our happiness. And if they are, we need to rethink it. Because those are not things God has assured us can never be taken from us. As a matter of fact, it's just the opposite. The perfect peace comes when the mind fixes on him because we trust him. Now, again, God doesn't cause these things. He's not the source. The only source from God is every good and every perfect gift coming down from the Father of lights. Well, where'd the curse come from? The curse came from sin. We forced God's hand. Just like God doesn't want to send anyone to eternal damnation, but we force his hand. He wants to save us. He's done everything he can to save us, but sin has entered the world and things have occurred as a result of that. And so our trust in God cannot and must not be based on material blessings. If they are, we are setting ourselves up for a disaster. Verse 4, trust in the Lord forever, for in Yah the Lord is everlasting strength. So perfect peace is based on our mind being fixed and focused on God. Now that was Job's first thought. Job didn't think about blaming anyone. He didn't think about settling down in silence. He thought about God has blessed us. He gave. Now it's gone. Blessed be the name of the Lord. I'm not basing my relationship with God on my material possessions. I thought about asking Tim to lead the song tonight, but I just want to talk a little bit. This is just two of the verses in the song. Prince of Peace, control my will. Now, that's part of the secret. Now, of course, God's not going to reach in and click something off. The control comes from the Scriptures. The Scriptures are what controls our will. But if we give our lives into Jesus' hands, then he can control our will, and the secret will be ours. Bid this struggling heart be still. Bid my fears and doubtings cease. Hush my spirit into peace. This is where the soul starts to settle in silence, or this is where, in the midst of multiple anxieties, our comforts are delight. Control my will. Bid this struggling heart be still. Bid my fears and doubting cease, hush my spirit into peace. May thy will, not mine, be done. May thy will and mine be one. Chase these doubtings from my heart. Now thy perfect peace impart. All things work together for good to those who love God. Do you mean that tornado can work together for good? Do you mean that the loss of a loved one? Do you mean that what Job went through could work for good? Yeah. If we can't see that, we'll never find the secret. If we can't see that, in the many anxieties that we have, the delights won't be there to comfort our soul. Our souls will sink into silence. I've seen many people who go through something, and that's what happens. Smile is gone. Spring is gone from their step. Their mind begins to close down, and you can't even reach in. You can't help them anymore because they weren't prepared for what happened. So if we're going to let the peace of God rule, now let's remember, the term means the activity of the umpire whose office at the games is to direct, arbitrate, and decide the contest. Now we watch that today. If you watch any football today, you saw situations where two big hulky guys were about to do something that shouldn't be done and the referee stops it. In the heart of Job, in the heart of Job's wife, in the heart of David, in the heart of David's servants who were working with him, tremendous emotions were seizing them. Anger, bitterness, irritation, grief, sorrow, mourning, powerful emotions. We need an umpire. We need something in there to direct us not toward silence, but toward the comforts in the multiple anxieties, the comforts that delight the soul. So the secret is to learn or to know how to use the peace of God when your heart starts to tear apart, when things start coming into your mind that shouldn't be there. So God's peace directs the powerful emotions, brings order back into our hearts so we can think clearly, and focuses just like that little needle on the compass, takes us right back up to God. Job said, "Blessed be the name of the Lord." He didn't sin. He didn't charge God foolishly. He didn't settle down into depression. Now, I think we see a little bit of that after the three friends come, because the three friends, with their proverbs of ashes, led Paul astray, led Job astray. But with God's peace as umpire, Job responded in an amazing way, and yet not an amazing way. James said, "Take, my brethren, for an example, the prophets who endured tremendous suffering." Then he says, "You've heard of the patience of Job." So we talked last week, Jesus had God's perfect peace. Now, David first wept until he couldn't weep anymore. And his friends wept until they couldn't weep anymore. But then the friends turned to let stone David, and David turned to being comforted in God. So Jesus, in the garden, the emotions are overwhelming. "Father, if it is your will, take this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done." Now you say, well, how do you know they were overwhelming? Well, look at the next. An angel appeared from heaven to strengthen him. And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly. Then his sweat became like great drops of blood. But then he was in perfect peace, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him. Now wait a minute. I don't see any joy in the agony, in the strong cries and vehement cries in Hebrews chapter 5. But after the peace of God took over, it ruled, and he never had a problem with it again. He just simply said, "I'm going to submit to your will." After that, who for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. This is very similar. You remember when David was fasting for his child? And he fasted and fasted, and the servants were afraid to talk to him because they were afraid, wow, he's this bad now. Think what's going to happen when we tell him he's dead. So he sees him. Is the child dead? Yes, he's dead. He goes and cleans up. He sits down and eats. And the servants are going, this doesn't make any sense to us. And David says, he's dead. I can't bring him back. But I'll go to him. And he was comforted. Now here's Jesus in complete agony in the garden, but then for the rest of the time, through the trials, through the mockings, through the scourgings, through the agony, through the terrible things that he went through, joy. That's what the peace of God can do. Yeah, there's going to be an initial shock, like jumping into water and finding out it's much colder than you thought, and it just takes your breath away. It's like learning to walk, learning to talk. It's awkward at first. It's uncomfortable. Go home and try to button your shirts the opposite way. It'll drive you crazy because you can't do it. Try to tie your shoes backwards. And you say to yourself, I don't want to do that. And you go back to your normal way because it's easy. Keeping in perfect peace is going to take the same effort as learning how to walk, the same effort as learning how to talk, the same effort as learning how to drive or type. Most of us in our older age, we just don't want to do that anymore. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. I don't want to sit there and go through the frustration of trying to learn how to type with all of my fingers. So we just do this. You say, well, why don't you go to school? I don't want to go through the frustration, because it is frustrating. I can still remember. I think I was a sophomore in high school trying to learn how to type. And just thinking to myself, I hate this class. But I'm glad I went through it, because now it's second nature. It's not a problem anymore. Well, this is what we're dealing with. When you're trying to learn a secret as complicated as this one, you're going to have to go through some trial and errors. You're going to have to go through some circumstances to get there. So we're going to be kept in perfect peace if our mind is stayed. Well, then, tragedy strikes. I look to God. Praise God. I ask God for comfort. I say, the Lord gave, the Lord takes away. Then my mind wants to go back. Well, no, I'm going to bring it back. I have to keep it stayed on Him. And it's just a process. Job was able to do it. David was able to do it. Paul was able to do it. Jesus was able to do it. All the prophets were able to do it. It can be done. But it can only be done when the mind is stayed on Him. And the literal meaning of stayed is to lean upon, for rest or support. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. You know, we use this verse all the time for people in the denominations. We use this verse all the time when we're talking about doctrinal accuracy and moral purity. We trust in the Lord with all our heart. We don't lean on our own understanding. But now we do it with tragedy. We trust in the Lord with all our heart, and we don't try to work it out on our own. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. This verse is probably the most important step in learning the secret of how to be content in whatever state you're in. But we have to let go of our own understanding. And we have to stop being wise in our own eyes. You say, well, that ought to be easy enough. No, it's not easy. That's the hardest part. And that's why when we go through tragedy, sometimes we find ourselves wavering. And we find ourselves settling into silence. And then we find ourselves pulling ourselves back up and saying to ourselves, I can do this. God will be with me. When God's perfect peace is guarded. Now, this is what Jesus went through. Jesus walked through the valley of the shadow of death in a far more serious manner than any of us ever will. And after that initial plea to God in the garden, he never feared. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Who? For the joy that was set before him endured the cross. Can it be done? Jesus did it. Well, Jesus is the Son of God. Job did it. Well, Job was the greatest man. David did it. Well, David, I mean, you can make excuses or you can say to yourself, this can be done and I'm going to have to take the steps to do it. It's tough to do because it's like learning how to type. We have a normal way of responding. But that is exactly, I mean, I have a normal way of responding of every stimuli. Sometimes it's a lust. Do I say to myself, well, because it's a lust, it's just me? No, we go through the process of putting it to death. So when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were looking into the fiery furnace, that was a tragedy, but not to them. Daniel, before the lion's den. Still others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. Now that would be a tragedy, don't you think? Being drug off to be stoned and having the first rock hit you and know how it was going to end. They were sawn in two. Can you imagine that? Feeling that saw start to cut into your flesh until, well, we won't even go into it. It's too disgusting to think about. They were tempted. They were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins. Now here's people who didn't have an immediate release. They had to live through it. They lived in caves. They wandered in sheepskin and goatskins, destitute, afflicted, tormented. But they're in Hebrews 11 because they endured it. And they endured it because they knew the secret. And because they were not going to allow their soul to become still, they were going to be comforted in God's delights. So let's go back to Philippians 6 again. And let's think about what he's saying here. Anxiety is normal. You get a phone call in the middle of the night from a child. You're already concerned because it's in the middle of the night. Something's not right because they don't do this. So your anxiety starts, and then they start telling you, just been in a terrible accident. Oh my, the anxiety starts to build. There's nothing wrong with that. It's normal. This verse says, don't be continuously anxious. It's not talking about, remember Paul saying, I have anxiety for all the churches? There's nothing wrong with an initial surge of anxiety, but then you learn the secret, and then you start tamping it down. You start looking for the request. So I get this phone call. I start praying. We go to the hospital. They're in surgery. I keep praying. I trust in the Lord with all my heart. I don't know what the outcome is going to be. But I know that God is going to be with me through all this. And I know that whatever happens, God has confidence in me, just like Job, that I can get through it. And that he never promised nor assured me that I was going to go through life without tragedy. Now, do I want that? No. Alan, would you like to have one of your children die today? No, Lord, I wouldn't. But if it happens, we go through the anxiety. We go through the requests. And we wait for the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding. Now, it may not come right away. And it may take a lot of work on our part, but it can happen because that's what he says. So we start looking for the request. There's always a request in anxiety. There's always something wrong that we need help from God for. So find it. And then trust God that he'll take it from there. And whatever he does, all things work together for good to those that love God. I don't have an expectation of what the outcome might be. Now, I have a desire of how I want the outcome to be. I want the outcome to be that everything goes back to normal, but sometimes it won't. And at that point, I have to start asking myself, and you have to start asking yourself, I said I trusted in God. I said I'd be faithful till death. I said that I would continue to do the Lord's will. I'm not going to be like Job's wife. I'm not going to let my soul sink down into silence. I'm going to continue that process until we reach the point, like Job. I don't think he was talking despondently there. I don't think he was saying, well, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. And I think he was serious. We brought nothing in. We can't take anything out. what we have here is temporary. Even families, wives, children, health, it's all temporary. We know that. But then, when it touches us, now what do we say? This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where we get to show God our sincerity, our genuine love and devotion to Him. And if we can do that, He says, I will give you peace. You can have peace. You can't explain it, but I'll give it to you if you trust me. If you put all of your trust in me. Perfect peace because His heart is stayed on you because He trusts you. That's too simple. How can that secret help? Well, we have to work out our own salvation. We have to make that work, and we can. It's just a question of faith and learning how. Just like you learned how to type, just like you learned how to drive, and you learned how to walk, and you learned how to tie your shoes. Now, at the time, it was very awkward and very frustrating, but we got through it. So, this is important because I'm looking at the world right now, and I keep saying this, but it just seems to be getting more and more dangerous and less secure. We don't know what, it always has been. We just never think about it, but it's always been that way. The Lord could come back at any moment, even the highest prosperity of American lifestyle. So it's just a question of whether or not we're going to get prepared before it happens, or prepare ourselves while it happens, or become overwhelmed, or become comforted in the delights that God has in His Word that we can find. And so as we pick up our songbooks this evening and we think about these things, as we sing number 313, I realize there hasn't really been anything said in this lesson that would fit with this song except that sin will nullify all of it, because we can't expect God to do anything for us if we're in sin. And so as we sing number 313, if there's anyone in the audience who recognizes that they're not in a position where God could even help them right now, or you haven't become a Christian yet, and so God doesn't hear the prayers of sinners, if we can help you in any way, we invite you to come while we together stand and sing.